So that was a, what is this? Oh, let me look at the package. A Texas barbecue cricket from Aketa, aketta.com. They sent me some samples so I could tell you guys how they taste. And I'm not going to lie to you. When I first saw them, and their little eyes looking up at me, I mean, they're crickets. They're basically crickets. And there's something primal deep down inside that says, I don't want to eat a bug. The last time I did eat a bug was actually in, these are actually pretty good. These actually are pretty good. Was in survival school. And I don't know. It's just something that it seems to go against everything we are as humans. You know, we see bugs in a restaurant, we freak out, and here we are eating them. That was a crunchy one. So it makes sense that, well, do you know what? You're going to hear all about it. You're going to hear all about it on this episode. And what we're going to talk about is the future of food. We know the population of this world is growing and growing and growing, and our resources are becoming limited, mainly because of farming, and are we farming efficiently, and do we have enough space to farm, and things like cattle take a ton of water to produce the meat, and there's just a lot of things we got to think about, especially when there's going to be 9 billion people on this planet in like 45 years. So there's companies out there that are saying, hey, you know, we can address this issue just using a little bit of creativity and a little bit of science. So today I'm interviewing these folks from Aketa, A-K-E-T-T-A. You can find them at aketa.com. And what they do is they make edible insects, specifically roasted crickets. As Westerners, it really sounds terrible, but apparently there are cultures all over the world that this is actually something just normal and palatable to them. So this company, they when they were students, they entered a contest about a sustainable business model, yada, 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 and they won $1 million to launch their business. And joining us, she wasn't with the interview, but she's going to come on here in a second, is Savannah. Savannah, are you with me? Cool.
I am.
All right, yes. Cool. So hello. Savannah lives like Hugh Hefner. Actually, I think it's a mix of Hugh Hefner and who's the guy that designed that giant boat plane, and he was crazy and he kind of lived by, what's his name again?
Yeah.
The Aviator. That's the name of that Scorsese movie. Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah. What the hell was his name?
I know who you're thinking of.
But I imagine that's where you, do you have bottles of urine all over your house?
No, that's all I remember from that movie.
Yeah, that's right. And his fingernails. And that's true. Crazy. That guy really lived like that. So I already did a little brief info. Today we're going to be chatting about the future of food. What do you know anything about that? Like where we want to go? What problems do you think we're going to be having in the future? Anything like that? Basically, what I'm asking is this on your radar? Because I know you like futuristic stuff and futurism.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was into entomophagy a while back. I don't know if I ever talked to you about eating crickets before.
No, you didn't. I didn't realize you were a cricket eater.
Yeah, I have Exobars.
Okay.
By the way, the best kind of Exobar is the banana nut bread, just in case anybody ever wants to buy one of those.
Banana nut bread Exobar.
It sounds kind of weird, but they take the cricket flour and they use that, and then they just kind of make a sort of a protein bar with it.
Okay.
Not bad.
See, yeah, I could do that. I could do that versus eating the actual whole crickets. I think it's and when we get into the interview here in a minute, because I for the listeners, I actually did this interview last week, but and we're kind of filling in the beginning and the end here. However, I think one of the big issues is trying to get something like this stateside, at least in America, to catch or to take off. You have to get over the fact that you're eating bugs, and it's. I think my thought on this is that it's somewhere deep in our primal DNA, because I don't think it was necessarily good to eat bugs when we were cavemen. Do you think?
You don't think it was necessarily good to eat bugs when we were cavemen?
Yeah. I mean, like, what if we picked up a bug and we're like, I'm going to try this sucker out, and it stings your throat?
Yeah. I don't think that would happen very frequently.
If you ate a bullet ant?
Maybe they could. Yeah.
Or a wasp.
I'm trying to think about this. I actually don't think that would be very likely for our ancestors to have done that.
Think about it this way. What is your reaction if, let's say, you're just sitting at your table, and I'm sure this has happened to you. It's happened to me. And out of the corner of your eye, you see something scatter or skitter, whatever you want to call it. And then you look down and it like runs over your hand and it's a bug. You jump, right? You recoil.
Yeah.
That's not something where you're like, oh, it's a bug, I should be scared. No, that's like a reflex action if a bug comes running by to jump. I think there's something deep in there that says, you know, maybe we should stay away from bugs and focus on little furry animals and things like that.
No, I disagree, because I think that's actually a learned response.
Oh, okay.
I think they did a study with monkeys where they could see that some monkeys were clearly afraid of snakes, but they could also sort of, they somehow proved that, well, in this particular study, they proved, quote unquote, proved mm-hmm. that the monkeys learned that fear.
Okay. So this is something that maybe culturally, I have trouble saying that word, but the way I was brought up is what basically revolts me about eating bugs, and that had I grown up in the Serengeti, that maybe this would be something normal for me.
I think so. I mean, and I think it was even mentioned, like one of the guy that you interviewed that we're going to be listening to.
Yeah.
I think he even says at some point that something like 2.8 billion people in the world eat bugs.
That's right.
Eat critters.
Yeah. He does bring that up. There's also, if you noticed, he's part of actually Aspire Food Group. So the company is Akeda, and that's the one that does the crickets, and they do cricket flour and all that. But Aspire itself is they combine technology with sustainable farming of insects, and they bring it to areas of the world where there might be an issue. You know, it might be an issue with food, resources, things like that. So they actually do a lot of work in Africa. And I'm trying to bring up the page right here because it was let me pull it up here. We talk about it on the interview, but I want to say it was like some sort of boll weevil or something like that.
I remember that.
Yeah. So basically, it in Africa, it's a little bit, you know, people, it's part of their culture. So somewhere like that, it may work. And do you know what? If it comes down that we start having, you know, large food shortages and stuff, and there's a country like Africa, or maybe even some, Asian islands and things like that, that are okay to eat, that's great. Let them eat all the bugs, and we'll stick with the meats and all that good stuff. Next question. Would you, or how do you feel about lab-grown meat? Because that's also an option on the table.
Well, I mean, the scientist in me and the biohacker in me is like, yeah, let's do this. You know, mm-hmm. it's stupid for us to waste, animal lives and all the, like, as you say, the farmland.
Right.
But then I think about the fact that it's sort of the philosophy that's going into lab-grown meat is the same philosophy that went into sort of our mass-produced processed foods that we have today that are really making a lot of us sick.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And we didn't
think
it at the time.
And
we didn't think we'd get sick.
And so this could be like another... I don't know what you would call it, something that you think is good, and when you get down to it, you end up destroying a lot of stuff. Do you know anything about the meat, like how close it is to natural meat?
I have no idea. And I don't think we can know that, because we don't know what we don't know.
Right.
And that's what Nassim Taleb kind of talks about in Anti-Fragile. I don't know if he says this. I think he makes a point about how basically we just don't know what we don't know. So right. We don't know all the universe of what goes into actual cow meat.
Do you think?
So we think we do, and we can make something that's a lot like it in the lab, but maybe we're missing a bunch of components that are key to being biocompatible.
I think you have to eat part of the soul when you're eating meat. And it, you actually absorb part of that. So if you eat a lot of...
To, It has to come from an animal that was tortured. Yeah. You have to eat the pain.
It makes me powerful. That's why I eat a lot of sharks. Shark? Plural? Sharks? I just pulled up a thing here. It says 660 gallons. Come on. That can't be right. 660 gallons of water is needed to make one hamburger. Does that even make sense? The industrial paper cotton clothes all about another 44 gallons a day. It takes 1,000 gallons of water a day per person to produce the food and drinks in the average U.S. diet. So, I mean, even 1,000 gallons of water, let's say half of that, 500 gallons of water a day for your diet. That's a lot. And that's counting like the farming and the growing of crops and things like that. So yeah, you know, if in the future we start having polluted water, water shortages, hopefully desalination stuff would end that problem. But if there's ever an issue, then yeah, if you could just grow it in a lab for pennies on the dollar using less resources, I mean, they're not giving off methane. I guess methane has an issue with the environment. I don't know. These are all things that they say might be an issue. Grazing lands, clear-cutting forests. I mean, wherever you stand on the climate argument, you don't want to live in a shithole. You know what I mean? Like, let's say I'm against, I'm like, whatever, with climate, but I don't want my house to be polluted, my water to taste bad, you know, or be poisonous like Flint. So everyone should be, to some extent, despite your political leanings, an environmentalist in the fact that you just want to live in a clean, healthy place.
Yeah.
So if it comes down to that and you can mass produce meat, healthy meat, you can like, you can even alter it, right? You can make it full of, oh, and then we run into the problem that you're saying. If we alter it, what is it? You know, what's going to happen? Is there something that we're, So, I don't know. I think it's something that we're going to have to address. And I think we're going to see it more in the future. The first hamburger costs like more than a quarter of $1 million to make. So I think personally, the price is going to have to go down just a little bit for me to enjoy that burger. And then with the crickets, I don't remember, you'll hear in the interview, he talks about how much resources are needed, but it's a fraction. It's a tiny little fraction of what would be used for beef or chicken without any of the environmental repercussions. They do it in what do they call it? Like vertical farming. They do it in buildings.
Well, see, you can do that, not necessarily with cows, but you can do a lot of vertical farming. That's something that's going on with all of our vegetables and stuff. Mm. And I like that trend. So that could save a lot of space and resources and still feed a lot of people. And really, I think our obsession, I mean, we all want meat, but I think it actually, even for somebody who's paleo, I don't know if you listen to Ben Greenfield. He's a fitness expert, but I think...
It sounds really, really familiar. Ben Greenfield.
He has a podcast, the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. And I remember one time he said that he only eats, I think he tries to even keep his meat consumption low. I think just something like every other day or maybe every 3 days, he'll actually eat meat. Hmm. So I think we obsess a little bit too much with eating meat. I think if we all kind of ate it like we were supposed to, where we not only eat the muscle, but we also eat the organs and we, you know, cook the bones so that we drink the bone broth and all of that, we probably could sustain ourselves a lot more. And we did it in moderation. I think we would still have something that was sustainable. Yeah, I just made all of that up, but maybe I'm right.
Damn it. It sounded right spot on. So I'm just going to say it's fact. Get all your facts here at the Wait What If podcast. We know everything about science. Everything. Well, all right. Without further ado, let's get into this interview. These guys again. Holy shit, I forgot the guy's name.
Aket. Oh, I don't know his name.
Ah, God damn it. It was...
Mark Jason.
It was like Vincent... Hold on. Let me just pull it up here. So without further ado, we'll get into this interview with Vincent Vitale. He's the... he had something to do with the business. I don't remember his exact title, but...
Biz dev?
Say again?
Is he business development?
Yes, or something like that. I'm sure I can look at his email, but why not delay this as long as... Whatever, Vincent Vitale works for Acada. Actually, he works for Aspire Food Group. And he kind of... I just had some questions. I had questions about, you know... what kind of business model this would be, how this works, how one even begins to start a business where you're making bugs for people to eat. How do you market them? How do you make it palatable and all this? So he kind of fills us in on that, and check it out.
You're listening to the Wait, What If podcast.
We are talking to, and I hope I say your name right, it's Vincent Vitale or Vitale?
Vitale, yeah. It's perfect.
I missed which one it was, the first or the second.
Vitale,
okay.
Yeah.
We had talked about this subject actually a couple years ago, and it started on, I had read an article on lab-grown meat, and when I first heard it, I was like, hey, it's a great idea. You know, you don't have to waste all this farm space and use all this water and antibiotics and all that to develop meat. I think the burger was a couple ounces and it cost $300,000 to make. But the idea was, if they can artificially grow this meat in a lab, then, you know, obviously the environmental implications drop down. If they can do it at an affordable price, pricing drops down, and then you can feed a lot of people. But then when I really started thinking about it, I thought maybe it would be kind of creepy. You know, on the outside, it's a good idea, but I didn't know if I could accept the fact that what I'm eating is something that tastes like meat, looks like meat, but is not actually meat. And with that conversation that we had about that, we went on to the introduction of mealworms and bugs and stuff as part of maybe the answer to worldwide starvation or worldwide shortages on food. Then just recently, I was reading something on an entomophagy. I'm in medicine, yeah. And I can't even pronounce that. Entomophagy. Okay, there we go.
Entomophagy, yep.
Yeah, and I was looking through that, and I saw this company called Aketa.
Aketa.
Yeah, yeah. And out of Austin, Texas, and you guys specialize in making edible bugs, right?
Yeah, so let me shed a little light on that. The company is actually called the Aspire Food Group.
Okay.
And we specialize in creating agricultural technology centered around farming insects, mostly crickets.
Okay.
And our brand is actually Aketa. So that's the brand of the food products we produce from crickets. So okay. We have a cricket flour that acts kind of like a protein powder. We have dry roasted seasoned crickets that come in savory flavors. And then we're going to be launching a granola soon. So those are all Aketa products. The company itself is called Aspire Food Group.
Right. And I kind of picked up on that when I was looking through or doing some research on this. And the Aspire Food Group is kind of a more interesting story as far as I'm concerned, because it looks like, can you tell me the background of it? Because I'm sure I'll just butcher it.
Yeah, sure. So the founders of the company actually competed in a prize called the Holt Prize, and it's the largest student business competition in the world. And the prize is for $1 million. They competed against 12,000 other student-run companies, and they ended up winning the $1 million grand prize. They
wow.
used that as their initial seed funding. And the thought of the company was to modularize insect farming. And so that's how they started the company. And the insect farming was really centered around finding a way to efficiently farm crickets at mass scale. So that way they could help feed the world, as crickets are packed with protein and extremely efficient for the environment.
Sure.
To farm.
Well, let me read actually something from Texas A&M, something from you guys, Agricultural Journal. It's called AgriLife Communications. They said that the world is less than 40 years away. So that would put us right around 2055. Yeah. 40 years away from the food shortage that will have serious implications for people and governments. According to a top U.S. scientist at the U.S. Agency for International Development, for the first time in human history, food production will be limited on a global scale by the availability of land, water, and energy. That's from a Dr. Fred Davies, who's a senior science advisor for the agency's Bureau of Food Security. Anyways, the point he's trying to make there is they're talking about an increase of population of the world up to 9 billion. Right now we're at 7 billion. And we tend to look at our past to predict our future. And unfortunately, our futures tend to be exponentially developed instead of, you know, we can't look at the graph from behind. We have to kind of imagine the graph going forward as much steeper. And 40 years isn't a long time. It's not a long time at all. And it's about time for us to start implementing these changes. Why insects? Why crickets?
Crickets are over 60% protein per bite. So when you think about that, they're just absolutely packed with protein. And they're actually incredibly efficient to farm. So when you look at a lot of the current ways to get protein, a lot of people quickly jump to cows. And right. Cows and the cattle industry actually give off more CO2 emissions than the automobile industry. So the cattle industry is just extremely inefficient when it comes to the environmental preservation. And, you know, when you think about the process of cows, they, A, consume a lot of water, they eat a lot of feed. You also have to take into account how much space they occupy. Crickets, on the other hand, can be farmed vertically, and that's what we do.
Okay.
So it's vertical farming, and they require very little water, very little food. And when you take into account all the different environmental factors, they produce at an extremely more efficient rate to get that protein.
Okay. Did any other insects wind up on the, I think I saw weevil, palm weevils?
Yeah, palm weevil larvae we are farming in Ghana, in Africa. So that is another separate project.
Okay.
And the question, why crickets as opposed to other insects? Well, mm-hmm. crickets actually taste good by themselves,
okay.
Which is rare in insects, as you can imagine. Crickets also convert their biomass, meaning, you know, if a cricket consumes garbage in the environment, it essentially will attain those garbage characteristics. So we're feeding crickets triple-filtered water, an organic grain and soy and corn-based diet. So they're converting into a much more efficient protein and healthier source. And crickets can also be farmed globally, so they can live on any continent. You can find crickets anywhere. So when you take all those factors into account, they're, once again, just an extremely efficient insect.
They're like the chicken of the insect world.
Yeah, except even better for the environment.
That's cool. And you seem like a young guy. Is your whole team, how old are you guys?
So we have 35 employees now, so it's a broad spectrum.
Oh, wow.
But I'd
okay.
say, yeah, the team as a whole is pretty young. The co-founders are all in their 30s.
Okay, that's really cool to hear. I like to hear that. And where did you come into play? Were you part of this student contest, or were you hired on afterwards?
I was hired much after, okay. Actually this past January. So my background's mostly in digital marketing. The company was looking to make a strong digital push this year,
yeah.
As they've launched a couple what we call CPG products, consumer product goods, and my role is really to come in and drive sales digitally.
Yeah, and that's important nowadays. It's really important to have that footprint. Do you guys do all the farming? This is specifically cricket farming. Do you do that there in Texas?
Yeah, so we have a pretty large facility in Austin, Texas. It's not what you would think when you think of farming. It's a lot more almost like pharmaceutical grade, where there's a lot of white space. Once again, it's a vertical facility and vertical farming. So it's a lot more, I'd say, scientific than it is farming, as it is really precision farming. You know, these crickets are getting the exact amount of water and feed that they need to become the super efficient converter of protein.
Yeah, and that's really important, I think, especially, you know, obviously if you guys use a lot of water and power, it would just kind of defeat the purpose of trying to expand food sources for people. Do you find that, Yeah, you know, with the weevils in Africa, do you find that this food is most likely going to be more palatable to cultures that don't, you know, turn away in disgust from bugs? Do you find that, or do you think that American culture will be able to adopt something like this?
So there's three main points there. So in the world today, 2.8 billion people consume insects. So Americans are really the outliers when you look at the world as a whole. The second point is that food culture is changing. People are looking for more sustainable foods in America, and they're looking for a higher protein diet. And as you mentioned at the beginning of this piece, there is a lot of research being done to alternative meat sources. So crickets and our real focus in America is because we're really aligning with where things are going. And the third piece to all this is Americans really dictate food culture. A lot of different countries want to eat like Americans and Western civilization. So if people in America and North America, for that matter, are consuming insects, that really has a lot of weight when it comes to the global food situation.
How do you introduce a product like that? I mean, do you obviously, you're into the digital marketing, but do you go to, like, I don't know, the Astros ballpark and say, hey, we can bring these to you and, I don't know, kind of do your pitch? And or how exactly do you do it? Because this is way different than having a organic popcorn brand, you know, or at least maybe on the outset, it seems like that, or an organic, I don't know, honey brand, where you can, everyone knows it, everyone's familiar with it. And, you know, if people want to spend the extra money for something like that, they'll try it. But when you come in and you say, hey, you know, this is our brand. Oh, and by the way, it's got eyeballs and legs, and you usually step on these outside. It's got to be a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, there is definitely that ick factor when it comes to consuming bugs. Everyone's first reaction when they think about eating an insect is, you know, they immediately trigger that conditioned reflex of ew. But when you think about the different segments and how America's changing, there's a lot of people that are paleo, and that diet is pretty strict. It's hard to find great protein sources. So crickets naturally lend themselves to the paleo market. You think high endurance athletes, they're looking for a lean source of protein. So any cyclist, triathlete, anyone in CrossFit, runners, anything like that, they need lean sources of protein. So we apply directly to that demographic.
Okay.
Surprisingly, vegans and vegetarians, although crickets are in turn insects, which then are officially animals, vegans and vegetarians are very open to consuming crickets because a lot of vegans and vegetarians became and chose that lifestyle because of documentaries like Cowspiracy and the cattle industry.
Yeah.
And the logic behind that is that, you know, crickets are an extremely efficient source for sustainability and the environment. So a lot of vegans and vegetarians are surprisingly very open to eating our product. So to address your initial question, you know, how do you market this? You first have to figure out who's going to be most open to this. You know, we're going after certain segments of people, and we're also doing some pretty big events that are food-centric. So Paleo FX is one that we did in Austin. We just finished with Sweets and Snacks Expo, which was in Chicago, where there's thousands and thousands of people that are in the food industry that came to our booth and got to try our flavored crickets and really were in awe of how tasty they were.
I always, so when I was in the Air Force, I went to survival school, and we ate actually quite a bit of bugs, mainly grubs, because this was 15 years ago. I can't remember, but one of them tasted very citrusy, and it might have been ants. The ants might have tasted citrusy, but we ate grubs and ants and pretty much everything else we'd grab our hands on. But when I ate the bigger bugs, I found that they kind of stuck in my teeth a lot of it. They were very hard to chew. When you roast them, does it make them, like, what consistency do they have? I'm imagining in my head maybe like a sunflower seed or something.
Yeah, you mentioned things getting stuck in your teeth. We actually get rid of and detach all of the legs and antennas and wings and things like that that would get stuck in your teeth.
Okay.
So we definitely make it more palatable. And then we dry roast the crickets. So think of it similar to like a corn nut, a sunflower seed, and a lot of people reference chips. So it has that texture.
Oh, okay.
A lot of foodies like that are searching for what's called whole food, mm-hmm. not Whole Foods, the company. But a reason why crickets are such an interesting insect is because you're getting that whole source. There's very few animals that you can just consume the entire thing, right? You're not eating the entirety of a cow or a chicken. Obviously, there's bones you can't eat. Whereas crickets, you're getting all of that really natural health and vitamins and the benefits from them.
And I see you have, and you had mentioned it earlier, cricket powder. Do you find that, I would think that you would see larger sales of that because, you know, it takes away the ick factor. You can look at, I mean, if you think about it, it's there, but when you look at it, it's just like a protein powder.
Yeah, the business traditionally was definitely at selling the powdered crickets business to business. So we have a handful of clients that actually purchase that and use it as a protein powder. So think bar companies and baked good companies. Instead of baking with traditional flour, you can use a portion of the flour of our Aketa powder. And that creates this sustainable food line that's also packed with protein. So it really gives other companies a unique benefit and advantage. The reason we launched our consumer packaged good and the flavored crickets is really in response to demand from our consumers that were just eating the whole roasted crickets. They wanted a lightweight snack that was packed with protein. So we quickly pivoted and created a product that was lightweight and packed with protein.
Do you think that culture will change towards it? I mean, we in Raleigh, every year they have a bug fest and it's pretty big. I mean, you go there and pretty much the whole, there's like an area of the town that's just science buildings and history buildings and stuff. And that whole area gets taken over by entomologists and, you know, people like yourselves. And it's really popular. I mean, there's a lot of people there.
I started in January with the company. And what I've seen change in just the few months that I've been here has really been paramount. I mean, I don't know if you caught, but the Seattle Mariners were selling grasshoppers in their stadium, and they actually sold out multiple games in a row. And we ended up giving them a call and saying, hey, would you like to try crickets out? And they ended up selling our crickets in their stadium as well. So it's definitely something that takes some time. We launched our flavored product on March 20th, and by the end of March, we were on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. So I'd say there needs to be a lot more press on the benefits and a lot more light shed on the benefits, both environmentally and protein-wise. And it's a huge education piece. Sure. I think before things really shift, people need to understand the benefits and why. I mean, it wasn't long ago where sushi or lobster were looked down upon, and now they're considered delicacies. So it definitely will take time, but it's going to happen.
Yeah. Can you touch on again the work you're doing in Ghana? Is this, did you set up shop there because there was a food shortage and you guys had this business model, or can you get a little bit more into that?
Yeah. It was really to teach and give Ghanaians an alternative income more than anything. So, you know, a lot of people in Ghana have to work multiple jobs, and to make this low to mid range salary. And it's not very entrepreneurially friendly. So what we're doing really in Ghana is teaching people how to farm these insects, so the palm weevil larva. So it's more of a modularizing farming and teaching them how to farm for themselves and almost become entrepreneurs. And we're seeing results where Ghanaians that are going through that process are making more money than they were previously. And now they're almost their own business. And instead of taking multiple buses and taxis to and from two different jobs, they can really just control their own business through this farming process.
Is it as technical as with the crickets?
So I personally, as the digital marketing presence of the company, can't speak to the differences in the farming and the technology, but
yeah.
I do know that farming different types of insects are completely different processes. Okay. Crickets, for instance, you know, they require very little sunlight, so they have to be in a dark area. There has to be a certain humidity. And, you know, when I explained how our farm was more like a pharmaceutical lab, we're doing everything down to the science that is perfect for crickets. So it's definitely a different process for other insects.
Well, I think that's I think it's a fantastic business model. Personally, I think it will take off. I mean, it has to at some point when people get hungry enough. And that's when we were in survival school. They had us out for weeks at a time without eating, and it got to the point where, well, you're gonna be hungry, or you'll eat these grubs. And they taught us ways we could cook them up and stuff, and worms and whatever else. I honestly don't remember what else we ate, but yeah, when you're hungry enough, you'll try all sorts of new things. I spent some time in Mombasa, Africa, and what's that? Just north of there, near Somalia. These are all distant memories now, but I'm pulling up the map now because I can't forget it. Djibouti. And most of my time was spent down in Mombasa. And I remember I was walking and this lady was actually serving, or this is the first time I ever saw a bug besides the ones that are in the tequila bottle that, you know, were there for eating. And a woman had fried caterpillars. I didn't eat them. My crew member, he ate them actually, but I didn't go near him. I guess the point that I'm bringing up there is it's something that is obviously way more acceptable in Africa, and maybe this trend, if you start in Ghana, that will work its way across the continent.
Yeah, I mean, consuming insects is popular, like I said, most other places than America. In Canada, there's a couple insect protein bar companies, like Knack is one. In Mexico, they sell the Chopalinas, obviously, and it's a popular stadium snack. You know, Europe, it's growing as well as government regulation is becoming more open to insects. But in Africa, when you think about it, insects are consumed often. And in Thailand, for instance, crickets are extremely popular. So when you break out the world, insects are popular. America is definitely the outlier and the laggard.
I wonder if there's like a genetic thing there where... because I recoil I don't consider myself a big tough guy, but I mean, I went up against terrorists at one point in my life, you know. I used to do jiu-jitsu, but man, if a bug crawls on me, I jump like there's no tomorrow. And that has to be something genetic in there. And I don't know if it's because small, and it doesn't have to be crickets, but small insects can whap or pack a wallop if they bite you, and maybe there's a sense of that in there. But I think if you had a choice, crickets are probably when you're, well, maybe it's a double-edged sword because crickets are like the first bug that you pick up as a kid. You know what I mean? Because we know they don't bite and they're kind of cute. So, all right.
Yeah, well, you know, we're definitely going to send you some free products so we can reverse that and get you on the cricket chain.
That would be awesome because these shows are about 2 weeks out, or this one's probably 6 weeks because I got two ahead of you. But I want to definitely be eating some as I intro this and tell people how I'll do it and tell people how I enjoy them. But so Vincent, and I'm going to say it again, Vital, right?
Vital,
yeah. Business manager or business development manager of, I won't say Akeda, Aspire FG and, or Aspire Food Group and subset
awesome. Akeda. Yeah. Akeda, yeah.
Okay, excellent. Really cool business model, really cool story. I'll put links to your Twitter and your websites at the bottom of the show description. And
perfect.
I appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. And I just emailed you asking for your address so I can send some samples.
All right, fantastic. I appreciate it, Vincent.
All right, thank you.
All right, bye. So what'd you think?
I thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
I've had crickets before. I like them. Although I didn't get Akita. I got actually some live crickets and I roasted them myself.
Wait, seriously? You did? I didn't. Whoa, wait a minute. Back up here. So you actually did the roasting yourself?
Yeah, I bought them. So there's a website called Girl Meets Bug, I think.
Okay.
Girl Meets Bug.
Okay.
I think she should have called it Girl Eats Bug, but whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's called Girl Meets Bug. I don't know if it's still on. I was following it a little bit, maybe a year or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
And she has some resources. She has some websites that she recommends for buying critters. And so I bought the crickets that she recommended, but I don't know if if they already season them and they make them taste good, then that might be preferable.
Yeah.
It's
Girl Meets Bug. I just pulled it up here. It's fantastic. The first picture you see at the top of her webpage is, looks like a scorpion hanging out of her mouth, or maybe it's a mealworm or something. I don't know. That takes balls to actually get them and cook them. I would rather them, like I said, I could deal with it if it was maybe a flower. I think I could deal with that. I can honestly say I probably would have no problem with that. If I could take the powder and turn it into something that was delicious. But it's when you look at it, you see the bug, you see the eyes, and it's to take the first bite of one was really, really tricky. My kids just grabbed them and they're like, oh, let me try this. I'm like, wow. And my wife had no problem with it. With me, I also have a fear of bugs, which I don't like to admit often, but I do. I have a bit of, I just don't like them, man. When I see them running around, I just don't like them.
Well, you mentioned that in the interview. I thought that was interesting because talk about how that up. You've braved many things and yet...
Yeah.
A bug is like, no way. What about spiders? Are you afraid of spiders?
Nope. The other day I was working on my yard and I have these little downspout trays. I don't know what else you would call it. It's like a plastic tray that gets to the bottom of your gutter system that kind of spreads the water out. So when the water comes down, it doesn't put a big hole in the ground. Okay. So you kind of picture that. It's like a wedge of plastic. And I reached down to pick it up to move it. And my fingers went into a spider web. You know, you get that feeling right? So I flip it over and literally I'm touching the back of a black widow, the size of my thumb. I mean, the back was that big. I shit bricks. I jumped back and I was like, because that's the only time they attack is when you go after them. And I just dug my fingers right into this thing and it gives me the willies. Like it still freaks me out. And it makes me worry because my kids play all around here. But yeah, do you get many black widows up there? You must. I mean, we're in the same region, basically.
I've seen one.
Okay.
I think I've seen one out in the wild my entire life.
Oh, really? So we're both in North Carolina, but you're more in a city. I would call Durham more of a city, urban area.
Yeah.
And I'm out in the middle of the woods. So maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. But they're all over down here. So yeah, that could be part of the issue right there. You know, I'm scared of spiders. I don't know.
Well, there's something to be said, though, about kind of losing a lot of that fear. Like, I still don't like the idea of having black widows or brown recluses around, especially because of Roger. Like, a 6-pound dog may not be able to handle that punch.
Right.
But at the same time, spiders do kind of keep your house roach and critter free.
Like,
they set up. Yeah.
Little spiders, I'm fine with that. Like little spiders, yeah. I won't knock down a house spider. If I go outside and there's one like on my porch, I don't care. Because he's just hanging out. He's not doing anything. It's the real big freaky ones that I just won't go near. The ones that they just look evil. They're just their legs and their faces and their poisonous, horrible demon animals. So, yeah, and then I just realized too when I was eating the crickets that they had sugar on them, and that kind of I'm on an anti-sugar thing for the last 8 weeks, and that kind of brought me down a little bit.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So was it a lot of sugar? That's crazy.
No, it wasn't a lot, but it was still in there. But I mean, it was Texas barbecue. They also have sour cream and chive. I don't have the package right here.
That sounds delicious.
Your kid, like that, just talking about sour cream and chive.
crickets sounds delicious to you?
Well, yeah. Wow. I mean, as long as they're roasted, mm-hmm. they're, oh, yeah, they're crunchy. Dry roasted. Like, every once in a while. So when I made them, yeah. I did not roast them very well. And so some of them were like a little chewy.
Oh yeah. See, that's,
that's awful. Like, yeah, mm. It was disgusting.
Did they squirt a little bit in your mouth when you bit into them? Was it like a,
yeah. No, that didn't happen, but yeah. I did kind of have to swallow really quickly just to get them out.
What's weird is I don't have a problem eating, crayfish. And they're like
those
bugs.
Are like shrimp, right?
Yeah, but I mean they're water bugs. They're freshwater bugs. I think, do they get them in the salt water too? I don't know. It doesn't matter. But they're like I mean, they're out bugs. I mean, aren't they the same sort of thing as bugs? They're just in the ocean.
Yeah, I think it's just what you're used to kind of thing. Like, I think if you just continue to eat crickets after a while, you wouldn't even remember why you used to get disgusted by them.
Yeah, I guess you're right, but the ones that I just sampled, they were good, but I don't think I could sit here and chew on them. But that's just my thing. Like I said, the flour might be fine because it's. I mean, mm-hmm. you can also do whatever you want with it. It's full of because flour. I'm paleo, and flour is. I mean, you can't eat it. So trying to get little flour substitutes, it takes a lot. It's expensive, and it takes a lot of trial and error.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes like. We made pancakes the other day and I just totally screwed the whole thing up. And it was like, there you go, $10, just blew it. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it is terrible. Like almond flour sounds like a dream. And you're thinking, oh, this is going to work out really well. This yeah. will be a perfect substitute. And it just doesn't work.
It does. I mean, you get used to it. I love almond flour yeah. pancakes.
Yeah.
And Cara makes an almond flour bread, which is okay. But... what are you doing anything now? Are you doing paleo or are you doing?
No, well, I am trying to do the paleo, although yeah, I am. Okay. I have a hard time sticking to it, but I, yeah, that is my goal. And I'm mostly, yeah, for me, the healthiest thing is to eat lots of vegetables really. Yeah. So like the flours, like all those sort of tricks that we try to do to get sweets in, mm-hmm. it just doesn't work for me. Like I can't find anything that's delicious and that doesn't kind of, it's kind of like I'm an addict, like I'm a sugar addict. So I'll just go right back into my old habits if I have any of it.
Once you put enough work into it, I find that it's harder to go back into it because I literally felt like shit eating sugar. Like I felt like shit and I was doing everything wrong. You know, I was following the complete incorrect blueprint that we seem to think is the way we do things. You know, I was trying to reduce my calories. I was trying to increase my exercise time. So I'm working out an hour a day, lifting weights, getting sore, my joints and everything. And I'm like, that's the complete wrong way to do it. If you just eat the right foods and move like mm-hmm. there's a picture out there, you just Google like naked or not naked, bald or alopecia or something like that. A monkey that has no hair. I think it's a bonobo or maybe it's a chimp. So if you Google, bald chimp and this, from what I understand, this chimp isn't young, but it's got no hair. And so when you look at it, the chimp is just ripped. I mean, just solid, big pecs, huge arms. And how does he get that way? He doesn't go to a gym and work out. He just lives. He lives the way that he's supposed to live. So as long as you're eating the right foods and moving the way your body's meant to move, I mean, you're not going to yeah. get the intense hypertrophy that you know, if you want to be a crazy Mr. Olympia. But if you're moving yeah. correctly, you're going to get healthy. And that's, I think that's yeah. a very important aspect to it.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of Body that's by Science? True.
Yeah, Doug McGuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You bet. That's what I do. I go to the gym and I lift the weights really, really slowly. Everybody okay. thinks I'm crazy.
Yeah, yeah. How and do you do it like once every 2 weeks or?
I'm supposed to do it once a week, mm-hmm. and I probably do it once a month. So
okay, that might be a little too less of a. Yeah. Do you do any sprint training?
Yeah, I do. That's the one thing I'm pretty good about. I do Tabatas. Do you okay. know the Tabata?
Yeah, I used to do a lot of Tabata workouts, but now I'm quitting everything I've ever known, and I'm just doing strictly paleo. Plus, I'm doing we just said it, Body by Science. But I'm also doing a lot of yoga now, which is like a freaking drug. I love yoga. When I'm done, I don't know. When I'm done with the yoga session, my body just feels so good. It's like, so, you know, you can get runner's high and you can go out and run and technically get the endorphins. This is the only time with yoga that I actually feel the endorphins. And maybe it's because I'm not diluting myself with sugar and grains and flour. Maybe it's because I'm actually getting in touch with my body. But yeah, when I do a like a 30-minute yoga session, I just feel it's like wow, 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 wow. That's how my body feels. It's just kind of glowing and it's oh, it truly is addictive. Like I used to get that way, not the feeling, but I used to get like, oh, I got to get to the gym. I got to get to the gym. I haven't done kettlebells in 2 days. I got to get to, now it's like, as long as I'm following the Body by Science protocol, which is really 20 minutes every 2 weeks, 10 days is what I try to do because I have a longer recovery. The only thing I'm like, oh, I got to get in is yoga because I just, it feels so damn good. I'm doing them and I'm also doing GMB Fitness, which if you check out, I don't remember what episode it was back in the 30s. I interviewed one of the guys, one of the creators of GMB Fitness, Ryan Hurst, I think. I forgot, but if you just check it out, it's in the 30s. We talk about just, and what he does is just, it's basically like a yoga / functional moving, bear crawls, walking like a monkey. So this is a roundabout way to say that if you're eating the right things and moving like a monkey, then, you know, you can get in pretty decent shape.
Sounds pretty primal to me.
Yeah. Oh, primal. That's what the primal blueprint.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like we just have to get back to our ancient roots.
I think we really, really do. And maybe whole healthy foods like this. I mean, if people can get into doing crickets, I mean, I deal with it on a daily basis. You know, every day, every single day of my work, I confront people who don't understand the proper way to stay healthy, do not understand the proper way to eat, and have no intention about making changes in their life because it's become, you know, eating the flour, eating the sugar, eating a bowl of cereal in the morning has just become their, what's that word I'm looking for? Paradigm, whatever. It's just
paradigm.
Paradigm. And it's really, I mean, cause then think about it. I mean, even when I wake up in the morning, I pour coffee and I put a tablespoon of ghee, which is basically concentrated butter.
Clarified butter.
And then a tablespoon of coconut oil. And here I am. I've read the studies. I understand the science, and it still scares the shit out of me because of how I've lived over the last 40 years, hearing that low fat, high exercise, eat less, move more. And it's silly. And to get people to understand that is really, really hard. But I hope they start doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because I know, like, I've eaten correctly. I've gone through periods where I've eaten correctly, and I feel amazing. Yeah. I sleep better. I have better dreams. I have clarity of thought. I'm joyful.
Yeah.
And yet, you just have one or two, like, you go to a birthday party or something, and you have some cake, and you just start to kind of spiral down that road, and you get into these habits that are so difficult to break.
It really
is.
It's
really bizarre.
It happens to me. I mean, I try to do everything right, but yeah, well, like Christmas comes along, and you're like, oh, you know, I ate all this garbage, and hey, I didn't gain weight. So then you're like, oh, I can eat this at the end of the day. Oh, I can. And then yeah, next thing you know, my kid has a birthday party, and I'm putting away half the cake, and I'm like, what am I doing? But then you get back into it. Once you feel good, I don't know. It's hard not to. Like, I've been doing the intermittent fasting. I've been doing the 5-2, which I didn't think I would ever do.
What is that?
Nobody knows what that is. 5 days of normal eating. Well, what I would call normal, my paleo eating, and 2 days of fasting. So I'll finish my meal at, we eat early because we have kids. So I'll finish at like 5:30, and then I'm done till the next day at 5:30. A lot of people will say,
Wait. You finish your meal at 5:30. Oh, and then you can't eat until the next day at 5:30.
Yeah, the 24 hours. And most people will, and I did it too. When I first got into intermittent fasting, I was like, I'll do 12 hours. I'll do 16 hours three times a week. I was just trying it. And I'm like, man, I would never do 24 hours. It's crazy. But I just decided, I'm like, hell, I'm going to try it tomorrow. So I did it, and the first time I did it was hard. And you can eat. I mean, some people say if you're going to do it that way, you can have like 500 calories a day, and that can be like, you know, all your really good stuff, but just a little bit to kind of tide you over.
That's the research of Dr. Walter Longo, right? Or Walter Longo?
I think so. Something like that. I think so.
I think he's the one who kind of showed that if you have like, if you just modify your calories, you get the same effect. But sorry, please continue.
Well, no, I mean, it's you're right, because what happens is when people, check out the book, The Obesity Code, and it'll blow your minds, by Dr. Jason Fung. But
I know Dr. Jason, I don't know him, but I know
you've heard of him. Cool. Well, he talks about, so if you go into a chronic low calorie diet, so if you're saying I'm only going to eat 800 calories a day for the next 6 months, that is enough to tell your body, oh my God, we're in a famine. Let's start shutting down the systems. Let's start preparing to just survive until we get a feast again, until things get better again. And that's not good, because, I mean, obviously if your metabolism drops, you feel like shit, and you eat just a little bit and the weight comes back on. And that happens with everybody. Yeah. More than 90% of people who lose weight gain it back just because of that. So what intermittent fasting does is it says, okay, 5 days a week or however you do it, so the food's here. So we don't need to shut down the metabolism, because we're getting 2,000, 2,500 calories of good food. So we're not worried about shutting down our metabolism. But then all of a sudden, whoa, middle of the week, I haven't eaten in 8 hours. It's been 10 hours. It's been 12 hours. So your body starts saying, oh, we must be out on the move. So let's go ahead and increase adrenaline to give you the energy, increase growth hormone, because if we're moving around a lot, we got to repair our muscles and stuff. You don't feel hungry, because if you're out hunting and gathering and all you're thinking about is your stomach, then you're not going to be very good. And clarity.
Well, adrenaline makes you not hungry.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
And I think so.
And clarity of mind. You get really, really clear thinking. And I think that has something to do also with hunting, because you're burning ketones, and the ketones combined with the glucose in your brain, you get really... So now I look forward to my fasting days. And if you're listening to this and you're like, what the hell are you talking about? That's crazy. I swear I was in your position of thinking about that not too long ago. And once I tried it, and once I got my body used to it, I still do, like, if I'm hungry at noon, I'll drink coffee with a little ghee in it, just to give me a little bit of fat energy. And in the morning, I do the ghee and the coconut oil with coffee. But that's all I do during that time. And it I look forward to days where I'm not eating. It sounds so crazy, but it's like tomorrow's a fasting day. So what's great about it is, I don't have to even worry about packing lunch. I'm just like, whatever. I got my coffee. I'm good. Drink lots of water.
Wow.
Yeah. And then
anybody listening, though, be careful. Like, if you have diabetes, if you're on any kind of medication that might lower your blood sugar, you definitely don't want to do this without medical supervision.
Well, I think if you have diabetes, you're just a pussy to begin with, so... I'm just kidding. No, you're right. Wow. And that's why, I mean, there's so many different, I'm joking. How many patients I see with diabetes, I treat them.
How dare you?
And I try. But no, you're right. And something I always tell people who I'm dealing with weight loss and all that, is that 2,000 years ago, heck, 10,000 years ago, we're doing hunter-gatherer stuff. Picture where we lived on the earth. We lived in little tribes. We lived there for 10, 20 generations, you know, of people lived in little tribes and little areas, and you got used to the food that you were eating. And you might even have genetically adapted to it, which you have, because we have groups of people that are lactose intolerant. We have groups of people that are wheat intolerant. All these intolerances are everywhere. So, and then we have people that only ate fish in the winter, or only ate fish year round. So if you couldn't handle that, you would probably be sickly and die. And back 10,000 years ago, people weren't moving around. I mean, you were there. So your genetics and everything, you were part of that group. Well, in the last couple hundred years, that all got thrown out the window, because we can travel around and we can, everyone's having babies with everyone else. So all our genetics are just thrown out the window, right? And so that is something very big I bring up with my patients. I'm like, this works, but you have to try it for you. There's people out there that can go into ketogenesis, which is burning fat for fuel, in like a day. And there's other people, it might take you a week. And there's people that can handle a carbohydrate without having an insulin spike. And there's other people that a carbohydrate, they're totally screwed. And so it's absolutely different. So it takes getting knowledge That's big. And then knowing how things work for you. And the only way I feel... Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say trial and error. Yeah. I feel like you kind of have to just learn your own. Actually, Rob Wolf just came out with a book called... Rob Wolf just came out with a book about kind of about testing sort of how you metabolize sugar in different foods. And I'm forgetting the name. I'm looking it up really quickly, but
I'm gonna have to Google that. One of the big things I tell people too is you don't know.
Wired to eat.
Wired to eat. I'm gonna have to check that one out now. I just read the Obesity Code. I read Body by Science. I'm reading Mark's Daily Apple. I'm always on his blog there, but, and another thing I tell people is, you know, you're right. You know, you might do well with a high fat, low carb, medium proteins, or maybe you'll do better with more carbs, less protein. That's all fine, but get rid of the shit. Everyone can get rid of the shit. Everyone can say no sugar, no grains. Just do that. And eat everything the way it's meant to be, and then you'll know how your body reacts to things. Otherwise, you know, you could be, I mean, the list is a mile long. You could be having all these symptoms and feel like shit, and you don't know what it is that's causing it. And as long as you get rid of all the garbage that is definitely going to cause it. And I know, you know, you get preachy, and I sound preachy, and when I was eating sugar, I was annoyed by people, but it is kind of like a religion, because once you get into this and once you start feeling like you're supposed to feel, you want everyone to feel like that.
Yeah, that is true. And then, I mean, you kind of also, you get invested in it. And when you're invested in something, you want other people to join you.
Right. I want to share them the misery. I don't
know. Wait, so as far as fasting is concerned, I want to ask, so it's different for men and women. I'm kind of curious.
That's right.
Has Kara tried fasting?
She does inadvertently. Like she stops eating at dinner time or after dinner, and then she's just running around in the morning. So she drinks a little coffee with creamer, and that's it. And then once all the kids are fed and everything, then she eats around 10. So yeah, she does it, but doesn't realize she's doing it. She's like, wait a minute, I do that every day anyways. Yeah. But the difference, one of the big differences is how much glycogen that we can store in our bodies. And glycogen is the storage form of glucose that's in our liver and in our muscles. And you access that during a fast. So men tend to have larger stores of glycogen just because of larger muscle mass. So usually men need about 16 to 18 hours a day, or twice a week at 24, or once a week at 24, you're getting into it. Where women, I think, can get away with like 14 to 15 hours.
I mean, that's how it is for me. I feel like it's a little bit more difficult for me to fast than dudes, but maybe I still, whenever I did like a 24-hour fast, I didn't feel badly. I didn't feel that great. Yeah. But I felt proud. I was like, yeah, I did it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the accomplishment for me.
Because you feel like you controlled a part of your life. You know, food and thinking, what am I going to eat next? When it isn't bothering you.
Yeah. And that's actually, it really does dominate my life. Even now, like, because I'm still not fully into paleo.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think about food a lot. And that's hugely problematic. Like, well, I have other things to do with my life.
It is. And you want, again, get rid of sugar, get rid of all that stuff, and then live like you're a diabetic, basically. And then, you know, it simplifies
Although
things.
Right now I am shoveling down as many cherries and blueberries as I can because they're on sale and I love them.
Hey, that's a power fruit, isn't it? Blueberries, power something. It's like one of those power
blueberries
things.
Are cherries are just pure sugar. I actually don't think they have that much value. Although they're better than eating Junior Mints.
That's right. Someone called fruit, I don't know who it was, little bags of sugar water.
Sounds like Tim Ferriss, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. Well, that was interesting. I don't know. Next time you actually swing by here, I'm going to give you a shitload of crickets. Not that, Vincent, not that your crickets weren't delicious. They were. They actually were. They're really good. It's a thing. It's the cricket powder. You know, maybe I'll go with that. Maybe I'll try the flour. so I can start cooking some paleo stuff. Because you get a little limited. You know, you eat bacon 4 days in a row. You're like, bacon's good, but I really need something else.
Where do you get your bacon?
At the grocery store. I mean, it's hard to, and I would like to get everything as grass-fed and as organic as possible, but it's not always possible. The farmer's market here in Raleigh is pretty good, actually.
Yeah, it is good. I go there. But it's so expensive. And then every time I get it, I get bacon from the farmer's market. It's like, for some reason, the way I have never been able to get it to where it's thinly cut.
Oh,
so that right. It cooks nice and evenly and easily.
I kind of like the thick cut.
Well, don't you want it to be crispy? Anyway, I didn't mean to get off on a tangent.
No, it's all right. Do what I want to do is I want to shoot a one of those feral pigs or boars. They're all over, apparently. And
really?
Yeah, you bag one of them. So they're like, it's one of the few things I think I could shoot because, and I'm not a PETA or anything like that, but I'm kind of a big wimp because I love animals so much. It'd be really hard for me to kill one. I've never been hunting, but I think pigs, cause they're more like giant rats. They just ruin everything. And you knock one of those bad boys down. And I'm talking wild, not regular pigs, like the little pink ones. Yeah, I was sitting in a red light once and a big pig truck pulled up next to me and there were little holes in the side and these tiny little pig faces just popped out and were looking at me. And I was like, holy shit, I can never eat pig again because they were adorable.
I know.
But
I know, actually, you just made me feel sad that I eat bacon ever because those are the cute. And they treat them, the ones that are factory raised, or they're treated terribly.
Oh, yeah, they are. And that's I've had this idea for a show kind of on the back burner for a little bit, and it's been the idea of how are you truly moral? Are you really truly a moral individual? And you know, you might say, sure, you know, I donate to this and I do this and I do that, but if you're purchasing food from an animal that suffers, or I mean, purchasing food that is an animal that suffers. At what point is that your responsibility? Are you taking part in morals and that? I mean, that's, I don't know. It makes you think, like, same thing, like I'm recording on an iPad and an iPhone and all this, and the precious metals that are in there, or whatever they are, the rare metals, rare earth metals that are in there, are sometimes obtained by slave labor. And it's like, how moral am I that I'm sitting here benefiting from the hardship of others, or the hardship and suffering of animals. Again, yikes. I sound like a bleeding heart liberal here. I'm not, for the record, I'm a libertarian, but I still think about stuff like this. So that'd be actually an interesting show.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah, that's a good one.
Oh shit, I forgot to give a shout out. Let me just add it in here. So I go on Twitter and I find that the world of independent podcasting, I have yet to find a person that I've just chatted with who's a podcaster on Twitter who's an asshole. It's like we have this weird little bond and everyone is there to help everyone out. You know, we're not, people aren't there to be the, you know, I want to be the next Joe Rogan. People are in there because they kind of enjoy what they're doing. They have to, because it's a fun thing to do. And when other people want to learn about it and participate in it, everyone just sort of helps each other out. And no one's saying, you know, it's a really cool community. And I was chatting with this guy named, let me find it here. So, and before we go, I'm going to give a call out. Is that what the kids are saying these days? Call out? I'm such a dork.
Shout out?
Yeah, I'm giving a shout out to Vegas World 5. What's his? It's at Vegas World Incorporated. Hip-hop artist. He's got a lot of cool stuff. We were chatting about, you know, intros and kind of production things about working on a podcast and things like that. So he was a great help. So check out his website. It is, I'm looking at his Twitter and I don't see his freaking website. So do you know what, guys? Just go to Vegas. He is at Vegas World INC. Vegas World INC, and check out his stuff. Real friendly guy. And I really appreciated the help that he tossed my way. Other than that,
cool.
Till next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
love the flow. 69, now it's time for new believable people, and we must do it. If we don't control insiders, this will be over and over. To lead by an any big fat love, find common ground to halt the spread of lies. And we must do it, big fat love, find common ground to halt the spread of lies. And any America first.